Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the second part of my presentation on coronavirus 19. In our last video, podcast 705, we made an offer of $5,000 to anyone who could show proof of diagnosis. After thousands of people have seen our video, no one has come forward, not one. So what does that mean? That none of these thousands needs money? No, it means none of them has proof they have a disease. With no proof of disease, how can there be an epidemic? The entire epidemic is theoretical. There is no epidemic today. There is no new disease pervading the earth. It's a sham. The people who are sick and dying are the same ones who are sick and dying of flu every year. Not one death has been the proven result of infection from a novel, isolated COVID virus. It's all faith-based, a true religion, belief in that for which there is no evidence. Based on pop media, this is the single most successful marketing campaign in human history. There are unlimited resources driving the engines of information. They have created a nation, no, a world of dociles who no longer have confidence in their own ability to evaluate the daily news, who believe everything they are told. Do you really think the CDC cares whether you live or die? Be honest now. Do you really think your state legislators or your governor, do you really think these folks care if you live or die? Let's be realistic. For the most part, these bureaucrats spend their careers dedicated to one thing and one thing only, their own personal power and position. We're seeing that every day now. They advance themselves by doing whatever it takes, deception, media control, lies, endangering the public welfare. Nothing new with that approach. It's been around since the dawn of human history. But this video is about the germ theory. If you believe in COVID-19, you have to believe in the germ theory. Ever since Louis Pasteur thought it up, the germ theory of disease has had one objective: sales. Sales of drugs, vaccines, and procedures. Most are for healthy people. Most are unnecessary. So, the perception of necessity had to be created in order to sell medicines to perfectly healthy people. Fundamental to all sales, of course, is marketing and promotion. Pretense, misdirection, media saturation, whatever it takes to convince people of two things. Number one, there is the threat of disease. Number two, we have the only cure. This is the game since time immemorial. As we mentioned, there is a way out of this dilemma today. We don't have to wait for all the bureaucrats to keep delaying while they're trying for yet another stimulus package. The slavery we're under is self-imposed. If enough people did the research on the unreliability of COVID testing and the false reporting of numbers for the past 3 months, we could all drop our membership in the new state religion, open our doors, open our restaurants and businesses, and go back to work and take our country back. We want to go back to work. We're the workers. We could really do that. That's exactly what we have done for the past 30 years during flu season. Kept working, just like Sweden. And it never made things any worse. The numbers were about the same every year. So stop saying, this is different. Prove it. We'll give you $5,000 for proof of diagnosis. Obviously, Sweden has proven the contagion model of Fauci and the World Health Organization has proven it wrong. They never locked down, never signed up for mass hysteria. People went about their lives. Restaurants and schools stayed open. All businesses are open. And guess what? No epidemic. No necessity for radical dismantling of the social order. So here's the question. If this is a global viral pandemic, how can there be a virus that respects geographic borders? There's only one explanation for this. It's a contrived, man-made illusion, recategorization of cases of a mild disease that makes an annual appearance everywhere, the flu, and then creating hysteria based on unreliable science. Snake oil, bleeding bowls, leeches, mercurochrome, chemotherapy, boutique epidemics. You think people would figure it out by now that 99% of the time, diseases are misdiagnoses. We usually don't need medicines since the human body, most of the time, is a self-healing organism when left to its own devices. In podcast 705, we saw how COVID was sold to the world, how this most successful of deceptions is vitally dependent on one thing, a never-ending daily program of disinformation, attacking people's natural intelligence and instincts, their ability to deduce the truth using their own reasoning. But no, people must be alienated from any notion that with a little research, they can look behind the curtain and discover the puppet strings. That idea must be covered up at all costs. Dr. Rashid Buttar goes in on Bill Gates and Fauci. That's the title of a YouTube video, so search that title. I'll read it again. Dr. Rashid Buttar goes in on Bill Gates and Fauci. Here's a paraphrase of some of the things that Dr. Buttar says. Every scientist who knows that this is a fraud needs to open his mouth and speak the truth. Every aspect of virology and infectious disease is being ignored. Hospitals are being instructed, if people come in with the symptoms of the flu, don't bother testing them. Just send them home with a diagnosis of COVID. In the past few months, the germ theory of disease has become the world's most successful religion. Why do I say that? This is not just a metaphor. This is a fact. It is the new state religion. A couple weeks ago, the directive went out. No one may assemble in churches. No one may go to church. Whether you're a Jew, a Christian, a Buddhist, a Muslim, any religion, no one can go to church. But everyone must believe in the germ theory. So the germ theory is now our new state religion. It has replaced these other religions in a very real sense. So now while we are being forbidden from assembling to practice our own religions, we are indoctrinated with the tenets of this new religion all day, every day. Like all religions, the germ theory requires belief in that for which there is no evidence. The COVID phenomenon demands an unswerving belief that germs cause disease. There is a brand new disease that is rampaging through the world, killing people and making people sick. And we're going to save you if you just do exactly what we say and stay in your houses. I keep asking myself why I'm talking to all these college-educated people, and so many of them have drunk the CNN Yahoo Kool-Aid. The only thing that comes out of their mouths is recycled media slogans. And I finally realized what it was. They're not really stupid. I know they're not stupid. They've just become very, very lazy because they now accept anything they hear on pop media at face value as gospel truth without any consideration of its validity, without asking for any evidence whatsoever. I saw it on NBC, so it must be true. Okay, let's talk about hand sanitizers. Essential in maintaining the germ theory mythology and the belief in boutique epidemics is the fable of obsessive personal hygiene, killing germs on and around your body, all day, every day. Hand sanitizers like Purell and Germex are made primarily of alcohol and water. While these may inhibit microbial activity on the skin, the real question is, do skin bacteria need to be killed at all? The vast majority are harmless. Again, it's the whole germophobic obsession, which is in complete denial of human evolution, emerging as it did in a sea of symbiotic microbial life forms. Whenever confronted by some obsessive chattering on about hand washing and touching the face, etc., always ask the question, who benefits from promoting this general belief? Well, for starters, the $74 million hand sanitizer industry. As usual, money underlies the myth. The essential lie of the obsession with clean hands assumes a fact that is not in evidence. That fact is, there is no proven new virus to defend from. This is all marketing. What about face masks? This program of disinformation has been so successful that we should be truly embarrassed as a nation that we are so gullible and undiscerning. So what's the theory there? Masks keep the disease bugs out, right? And that will supposedly prevent this non-existent epidemic from spreading. Is that it? No one seems to question this notion. It's not open for discussion. But the fact is, any protection from COVID viruses is a scientific impossibility. For starters, let's just look at the numbers for face masks, okay? The average face mask uses a 16-gauge mesh in which the pores are 1.29 millimeters. Got that? The pores are 1.29 millimeters. The average size of a virus is about 250 nanometers. With us so far? Now, there are 1 billion nanometers in a meter. So that means that viruses could march 5,000 abreast through that mesh opening in your mask. A better illustration might be this. The Golden Gate Bridge spans 1,300 meters, okay? Let's say your kayak is about a meter wide. For a single virus to penetrate your face mask, it would not be anything like paddling your canoe underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. No, that would be much too crowded. It would be more like this. For a virus to penetrate your face mask, that would be just as easy as paddling your kayak under a bridge that was four times as long as the Golden Gate. One kayak passing through 5,000 meters of open water has just as much room as a virus passing through the pores of your face mask. Do you feel protected now? Can anybody do this math? Why don't they? Why does everybody just roll over and sheepishly comply with the face mask Nazi outside your local grocery store who tells you to put on your mask or you can't buy groceries because you're spreading disease? Masks are not a law. They are just CDC guidelines, suggestions. Everyone forgets, CDC is not a branch of government. CDC can't make laws. CDC is a for-profit private corporation. So, why do most people wear face masks? Mostly for peer pressure these days. Because it's part of the religion, the new state religion of the germ theory of disease. Your face mask is like ashes on your forehead for Ash Wednesday, or your yarmulke at the Passover dinner. It's a rubric. It says, this is my religion. I'm a member. I'll do whatever CNN tells me to do. I saw a guy yesterday driving around in his car with all the windows rolled up by himself wearing a face mask. What's the thinking on that? Can somebody please tell me? A famous doctor told me the other day that people who wear face masks are wearing them up too high. They should pull them down so that they're around the neck, because these face masks are nothing more than slave collars, identifying people as slaves to the new state religion. So let's do a quick review of germ theory. The germ theory is one of those terms that everybody uses and few people could actually define it. The germ theory holds that each disease is caused by a specific germ, and then it's the job of medical science then to identify that germ, to locate that germ in you, and then to find out which drug or vaccine or potion we can give you to kill the germ in you without killing you. That's the short version of the germ theory. As simplistic as that sounds, this myth pervades all of medical science. Peer-reviewed journals, the PDR, the vast websites of CDC, NIH, and FDA. It is inescapable. Everybody believes it. Even though the germ theory of disease has been completely discredited decades and decades ago, here's the real science. Here's the true science. Here's what all these doctors and scientists have said down through the years. The truth is that we humans, we live in a biosphere surrounded by thousands of microbes and bacteria, swimming in a sea of life, in this symbiotic relationship. Healthy people are surrounded by thousands of bacteria, both within your body and around your body. There are dozens of different bacterial forms which could be identified and cultured off the skin of a normal, healthy person. Intestinal flora, microflora that are normal inside the body of a healthy person. All these little life forms, they're harmless to the human unless an imbalance is created by your toxic lifestyle. At that point, a potentially pathological virus or bacteria may begin to proliferate. It may gain an ascendancy, which may result in illness. But actually, in order for that to happen, you already created the toxic environment. So it was the terrain, not the bug. The famous biologist William Keaton reminds us that there is a species of microscopic spiders that lives its entire lifespan on the human eyelash, causing no problems, no disease. It's a symbiotic relationship. That's just one of a thousand examples that we could give. No other creature in history has evolved in such isolation. Why would we think that we must? So back to the germ theory now. The notion is that the pharmaceutical industry has a drug for every bug. The militaristic idea that the normal human condition is to live in this hermetically sealed, antiseptic little capsule in which all other life forms are regarded as invaders to be killed off, this idea is completely untenable. Germs are not the cause of disease. They are the consequences of disease. A suppressed immune system is the cause of disease. Perhaps the biggest myth of the last 150 years is that only germs cause disease. Any true scientist knows there are many contributors to illness. Lifestyle, nutrition, hydration, drugs, hygiene, stress, no exercise, not being adjusted, no rest, the condition of the air and water, need for detoxification. Any of these alone can predispose to disease. Germs have nothing to do with it. They may come later as a consequence, the cleanup crew. Nobel Prize winner Walter Buchanan, MD, summarized it like this. For the most part, bacteria are harmless. The two books that best portray the contrast between Louis Pasteur and Antoine Béchamp are Béchamp or Pasteur by E. Douglas Hume and The Curse of Louis Pasteur by Nancy Appleton. These two books will save you so much time in getting the real story. Bichamp or Pasteur by E. Douglas Hume. Everyone who is interested in this topic of the germ theory, this is your starting point. So we learned that in the middle 1800s in Europe, the scientists were struggling with certain mysteries that they hadn't quite figured out yet. What makes something alive? Where do germs come from? Which comes first, the germ or the disease? Why do things rot, ferment, or decompose? These were poorly understood at the time, and scientists were trying to figure them out. The one that people talk about was spontaneous generation. So if there's a pile of garbage sitting in the corner and you see a cloud of tiny little gnats circling around the pile of garbage, in the mid-1800s, scientists did not know, did the garbage create those little bugs, or were the bugs there first? That was the level of scientific sophistication at the time. You'd think medicine would have advanced by now, but they seem to have one foot stuck in their superstitious past.
When you believe in things that you don't understand, then you're suffering. Superstition ain't the way. Stevie Wonder.
There were two schools of thought about the nature of life at this time. The first school of thought was the germ theory of disease, and its chief proponent was, of course, Louis Pasteur. The holistic side of the argument was Antoine Bichamp, the Frenchman. He had a completely opposite theory, his theory of microzymas and what constitutes the healthy body. Now, as far as Louis Pasteur is concerned, he is venerated as the discoverer of the germ theory of disease, which was very important, and that gave rise to the entire pharmaceutical industry, because if only bugs make you sick, then it's the job of an entire industry to figure out which drugs will kill bugs. But there are a lot of facts about Louis Pasteur that are covered up in most modern sources, and you can learn these beginning in Hume's book. The first one you find is this, that Louis Pasteur had no training or credentials whatsoever in either medicine or physiology. He was a chemist. Then we find out that Louis Pasteur very likely created the disease known as hydrophobia or rabies. Now, how this came about was in the cities of Europe in the 1700s and 1800s, there were a lot of stray dogs roaming around. And there were not a lot of sources of drinking water for these poor dogs. And as a consequence, they would often foam up around the mouth. So then this superstition developed that they were possessed by the devil. They were carriers of disease. Actually, this is the beginning of the whole mythology of werewolves. That's where that came from. Pasteur capitalized on this mass superstition, and he created this series of vaccinations for rabies. And when you really study this, he killed a lot more people administering these rabies shots directly into the stomach. A lot more people were killed by the shots than were ever cured.
This same superstition persists today with the idea of giving rabies shots to both dogs and humans. Just another example of forcing injections on perfectly healthy people.
Something else that Pasteur did, he was the one who initiated this whole practice of vivisection with horrific animal experiments. This continues to the present day, and this is why the modern pharmaceutical industry, a lot of it is based on animal studies, even though animals may have completely different physiologies from humans. And we find that rather than protecting the human race from disease, Pasteur may be seen more as a merchant than a scientist, unquote. From Nancy Appleton's excellent text on Pasteur, we're reminded that another reason for Pasteur's success was his close association with Emperor Napoleon III. A police state wanted things under control as much as possible. If Pasteur can make everyone believe germs cause disease, and the government can intervene with enforced injections, well, that's a match made in heaven. Sound familiar? Okay, now let's talk a little bit about Antoine Bichat. He was a legitimate scientist. He had 4 PhDs. He held 4 chairs at the prestigious University of Lille in France, one of the academic centers of all of Europe at the time. He was a true Renaissance man and scientist. He was a specialist in many areas. He was a prolific author, constantly writing many books and articles his entire life. Here's a few of the subjects that the existence of the inner milieu, not only the condition of the blood, but how the patient's lifestyle determines what is going on inside that person's body, which is the determinant of his true health. He was in the forefront of scientific knowledge of biology at that time, in the mid-1800s, late-1800s, and early 1900s. He helped to define scientifically the whole definition of the difference between health and illness. What constitutes health? What constitutes illness? For Bichat, health was not merely the absence of disease, but it was a harmonious interrelationship between all the parts of the body, the holistic model. Bichat is famous for elaborating the theory of microzymas. Now, both Bichat and Pasteur spent a lot of time with microscopic studies, and it was during years of this work that Bichat observed these very small little bodies, little dots. They seemed little dots that he would see on the microscope slide. And they were jumping around and floating around. And he would see them in the normal, healthy person. They looked a certain way. And then when he would take slides of a diseased person, he would see that they became transformed and looked different. And these were like the evidence of a change of condition in the person. These were not viruses or bacteria or parasites we were looking at here, but rather the very essence of life. Bichat referred to these tiny microzymas as imperishable builders of life. We find that Bichat was not only a scientist, but he also had a sense of humor, and he was a cartoonist. Here's one of the cartoons that Bichat drew in 1912, and you'll see there's a scientist in the laboratory, and here is God. God is appearing out of a cloud, and God's got his hand on the shoulder of the scientist, and God is saying, "What a blunder. I forgot to complete the immune system. I count on you to address that." A cartoon from Bichat. A lot of Bichat's work centered around his microscope studies for years and years and years. And he came up with the idea of bioterrain analysis, the theory of microzymas from Antoine Bichat. You will realize something, that this theory of life and biology and health has never been disproven to the present day. Bichat's work with microzymas did not die with him. His successor, one of his successors, was the German Günther Enderlein, who renamed the microzymas endobionts, and Enderlein actually came up with the technology of dark field microscopy. Many of you may have heard of that. Then later on, the next successor of this technology was the Canadian Gaston Nissen, and he elaborated more specifically what he called the somatid cycle. So he renamed these little beings that he saw, he renamed them somatids. This theory and technology has never been disproven. And then following Nissen's was Dr. Stan Bynum from National Enzyme Company, and I was lucky enough that Stan Bynum was my mentor, and he taught me bioterrain analysis and the whole technology of blood detox. I went to Asia with him on several occasions, and we did hundreds of live cell tests using Bynum's technology. I see all of this as an unbroken lineage, a heritage, really, from the work of Antoine Bichat. That's why I feel a connection with Bichat. This type of bioterrain analysis is actually routine in Europe. It's very difficult to find, in America, it's very difficult to find anyone at all who does it. Here's a quote from your textbook, "Vaccination is Not Immunization." legitimate scientists today see germ proliferation not as the cause of disease, but rather the evidence of disease. The disease came first, and that's from your textbook, Vaccination is Not Immunization. The disease came first. Bernard Jensen, here's a quote from him, quote, "Bacteria and viruses, which are cell scavengers, are there because there is malnourished, enzyme-depleted, diseased, and necrotic tissue. They are nature's biologic sanitation department to break down and eliminate the sick tissue to prevent poisoning by the body. If you stop their action, you allow continuous poisoning by the decaying tissue." That's from Bernard Jensen. I'm just citing a few of the dozens and dozens of the best scientists who disproved Pasteur's germ theory and who realized and proved that germs in the human body were scavengers, not predators. Scavengers, not predators. They only would proliferate if you created this hospitable environment for their proliferation by your injudicious, toxic lifestyle. Here's another one of those scientists, J.H. Tilden, M.D. Medical science is based on a false premise, namely that diseases are caused by extraneous influences. Here are a few of the best scientists of the past century, let's say. And they all demonstrated the same idea with their research, their life's research, the lack of science behind the germ theory. This is Alexis Carroll, M.D., Edward Howell, M.D., founder of National Enzyme Company, Walter Buchanan, M.D., author of The Wisdom of the Body, Weston A. Price, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration is his textbook. Here's Deepak Chopra citing an experiment that was done in Europe, I think it was in Germany, not many years ago. And he tells us of a study in which the influenza virus was isolated and deliberately implanted onto the mucous membranes, actually the tongues, of a group of subjects, and only 12% of them got the flu. So if they all got the flu virus placed on their tongues, why did only 12% get the flu? Because germs don't cause disease. Depressed immunity causes disease. That's from Chopra's book, Quantum Healing. And here's a quote from B.J. Palmer. If the germ theory of disease were correct, there'd be no one left alive to believe it. So, as far as germs and disease go, here are some famous quotes. Quote, germs seek their natural habitat, diseased tissue, rather than being the cause of diseased tissue. That's Rudolf Virchow, the guy who elaborated the cell theory. Quote, bacteria do not cause disease, and therefore serums and vaccines can neither prevent nor cure disease. That's Antoine Béchamp. And then the famous deathbed admission by Louis Pasteur, the germ is nothing, the terrain is everything. So he relented on his deathbed. Pasteur is said to have said that. Probably the best comment about Pasteur and the germ theory was made by Dr. Alan Cantwell when he said this, Pasteur made germs respectable. He was a genius at popularizing microbes as a cause of disease. Pasteur's dogma transformed medicine into a multi-billion dollar biotech business in search of the perfect pill and the perfect vaccine. In the process, the physicians were blinded. Let's look at selling the germ theory. How was the germ theory marketed and sold to people all these years? The germ theory indoctrinated the Western world with the belief that the salvation from all physical ailments lay outside the individual's system and responsibility because it was caused by external factors. Chemical remedies will keep him free from disease independent of his own responsibility. This is from Howard Hanke. So you see, this explains how the germ theory of disease necessitates the entire pharmaceutical industry.
Because if disease wafts its way into your body from the outside, then it's not under your control, not your responsibility. You give up the responsibility to the doctor. Only his drugs can cure you. That's the religion.
Okay, so Pasteur definitely won this controversy. He definitely won the argument, of course, right? Because he was backed by unlimited finances. It was the market, really, who won. And then it has been supported for the last 100 years with volumes and libraries full of pseudoscientific justifications for the sale of drugs. You're sick, you have a bug, we must figure out what drug to give you. And don't worry, if it's not the right one, we have 10,000 more. One of them will definitely work. So, pseudoscientific justification for the sale of drugs and vaccines, backed by the new pharmaceutical industry that was created by the collaboration between giants like J.D. Rockefeller, William Randolph Hearst, who controlled the media at that time, Abraham Flexner, who controlled the content of medical schools throughout the United States, and then, of course, Edward L. Bernays, the master of creating media.
The whole story is told in detail in the chapter, The Doors of Perception, Why Americans Will Believe Almost Anything, on our website.
The canonization of the germ theory of disease led to the birth of our $3 trillion annual empire, the pharmaceutical industry. Here's what Hume says about that. Quote, had it not been for the mass selling of vaccines, Pasteur's germ theory of disease would have collapsed into obscurity, unquote. That is obvious. So, in all fairness, we must admit that organized medicine did actually have one great triumph in the 1940s. And what was that, of course? Doctors today are still playing their only trump card. And what is that? Alexander Fleming's discovery of penicillin in 1928. So for one time in history, they really did pull the rabbit out of the hat. They really did find the drug that killed the bug in you that saved your life. That only happened one time in history. And the medical profession has been desperately hoping for a reprise of that triumph ever since. In vain. It has never happened. It will never happen. Medical science has been touting the success of that discovery, antibiotics, ever since that time down to the present day. No one would be more embarrassed by their invocations than Fleming himself, who warned us from the very beginning. He predicted the rise of the superbugs by a reckless overprescription of antibiotics. That's in your chapter, The Post-Antibiotic Age, on the website. So here's another example of how the normal healthy person lives in harmony with thousands and thousands of friendly bacteria. They're called microflora. Here's a chapter called Microflora, the Forgotten Component of Detox. You'll see this on my website. Now, when you really study the activity and the physiology of the human colon, you'll learn that the human colon is the center of the immune system. The center of the immune system is in the colon, and it's the presence of probiotics that makes it the center of the immune system. So what are probiotics? Many of you will remember that they are your normal gut flora. They make sure that your food is completely digested and there is nothing left over. They are responsible for the final stage of digestion. Probiotics are what causes the colon to be the center of the immune system. Perhaps the number one expert in the field of probiotics during the last 50 years was this man here, Dr. Kem Shahani. Shahani reminds us that probiotics are friendly bacteria which should exist in the human colon. the normal healthy person has up to 3 pounds of gut flora at any time in the colon. Up to 400 species of bacteria are normal in the human colon. Again, they are the cleanup crew for digestion. And so again, Bernard Jensen's quote is apt here. Bacteria and viruses are cell scavengers. They're the biologic sanitation department. They're the final stage of digestion. So the problem is that in America today, because of our general lifestyle and diet, the fast food diet, the processed food diet that most Americans have, like 80% of American people, most of us live most of our lives with little or no probiotics in the colon. Why is that? First of all, when you take antibiotics, it can destroy your gut flora. In addition to that, antibiotics that are given to animals whose meat we eat, meat processing, food processing does not kill the antibiotics in the chicken or the beef that you buy. Unless the meat is organic, then there's probably no residual antibiotics in it. But if the meat is not organic, you can be sure that those animals that were raised in corporate confinement have been loaded with antibiotics their entire life, and that will be transferred into your body when you eat that meat. Did you know that 70% of all antibiotics produced in the United States are given to animals whose meat we eat? Even the FDA uses the term epidemic to describe the amount of human disease from eating meat laced with antibiotics. That's from Shahani's book. Okay, here's other reasons that our probiotics are destroyed for most of us. Antacids like Zantac, Tagamet, Prilosec, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, Advil, Tylenol, prescription meds, over-the-counter meds. All these drugs kill your gut flora. Other things that destroy your probiotics include white sugar, chlorinated water, carbonated drinks, fluoridated water, antihistamines, and coffee. If you live your life with no probiotics, what can you expect? Proliferation of opportunists like candida, dehydration, electrolyte depletion. As the water leaves you, the mineral ions follow. Immune suppression. Chronic allergies. Primary colon disease. All these are the consequences of living your life with no probiotics. So Dr. Shahani spent most of his life formulating this blend of the best probiotics known to man. There were 12 different strains in his formula, and they were cultured in a symbiotic relationship, so they didn't kill each other off. They were used to living with each other. He developed them so that they would be antibiotic resistant. Now, most of you know that one of the worst consequences of taking antibiotics, it's likely that they will destroy your gut flora and you will have a lot of gastrointestinal distress throughout the course of your antibiotic therapy. The reason for that is it's killing your gut flora. So it took Shahani years to formulate a type of probiotics that could actually resist antibiotics.
Since Dr. Shahani was my teacher, his formula is still our recommended probiotic available on our site.
Leaky gut syndrome is a true epidemic in this country today, right? So what is that? It's when due to the accumulation of indigestible processed food in the colon month after month, it actually perforates the lining of the colon, allows poisons and toxins and undigested foods to be introduced directly into the bloodstream. This is the exact mechanism of a huge percentage of chronic allergies. Once in the bloodstream, these poisons and ingredients from processed foods can no longer be broken down and digested. As a consequence, they take up residence in any part of the body and can cause inflammation because they are foreign. This is the mechanics of chronic allergies that last for years and years and do not respond to antibiotics. Remember this, According to Fleming, antibiotics are for one reason only: life-threatening infections or persistent infections that simply will not go away. If antibiotics are going to help you, that's going to happen within the first couple of weeks. You don't keep taking antibiotics, changing antibiotics because they don't work, month after month, year after year. These people are extremely immune suppressed. So when the doctors can't find the cause of your allergies, here it is: allergy to accumulated processed foods. The best solution I've found for these patients, really dramatic solution, is to flood their colon with the best probiotics for a couple of months, and you'll see dramatic resolutions a lot of times of conditions of allergies that they've had for years and years.
This is a typical response and is precisely how the supplement was intended.
Here's an article from the journal Pediatrics showing that how probiotics reduce the incidence of respiratory tract infection in children. Fever was reduced 63%, cough was reduced 54%, antibiotic use was reduced 80%. Obviously, what do you think they were taking before that that was aggravating the respiratory tract infection? They were taking months and months of antibiotics and cough medicine. Just give them probiotics and watch them get better. Is it rocket science? No. Okay, this is the conclusion of the germ theory section. I just realized that it was so important to discuss the germ theory along with this discussion of coronavirus phenomenon, because as we demonstrated, the germ theory has become the new state religion that is more or less being forced on people. I've heard this said: without the germ theory of disease, people would never have obediently self-incarcerated themselves after a 10-minute video. But you don't have to do a lot of studying to poke holes in the germ theory and see that it just doesn't stand up to scientific scrutiny.
Or even common sense, for that matter.
The germ theory of disease is an unscientific, superstitious religion. Like I say, it's relatively easy to disabuse yourself of this illusion just by doing a little reading, one level below the daily propaganda level.
To summarize it all, then, just remember this: there is no epidemic. There is no new disease. There is no COVID. Epidemics simply don't operate like this. No infectious disease in the history of the world could have possibly spread the way they're claiming this one did. Even an actual virulent infectious disease like the plague or Ebola couldn't possibly spread throughout the world this fast, jumping from China to America and then to the rest of the world in 1 month, and then to begin counting cases in all these other countries with the whole world shutting down in 2 weeks after America shut down. It's preposterous, it's ludicrous, and defies all common sense of biological science. There's only one possible explanation for the current cases of illness: recategorization of the regular seasonal flu, which is a universal annual event. If this is a new viral disease, prove it. Isolate, purify, and sequence it. They can't, because it doesn't exist. If there were such a novel disease, why, out of the supposed million cases, wouldn't someone have come forward by now to claim the $5,000? That's because none of these cases has any proof whatsoever, with a massive political advantage for every case counted. Not a biological event, but just a political campaign. The worst tragedy is how easily we got sold this turkey. We've become a nation of compliant robots, so susceptible to the slightest suggestion about germs or contamination. Look at all the face masks people walking down the street by themselves. What are they thinking? What are they afraid of?
Where do they think the bugs are coming from all of a sudden? What an utter sham, pretending that a mild case of the flu represents the same threat level of virulence as the plague. Even those who are diagnosed are all fine in 10 days, 99% of them. This entire campaign is so obviously being artificially prolonged. How? When science bowed out and politics took over. When we no longer demanded proof for the diagnosis they were handing us. When the bureaucrats, who see America as a golden goose to be looted every way possible, figured out how it's in their best interest to prolong our house arrest beyond any reasonable scientific justification. The longer it goes on, the more money and power they derive. Now remember who these guys were next time you vote. Those of us who work want to go back to work. Those who don't work want to drag it out, hoping for yet another stimulus package. Happy to stay at home with video games and Netflix. What's the hurry? Don't ask questions. Don't try to figure it out. Don't do any research. Just trust in your doctor and stay at home till they tell you to come out. If you don't educate yourself, you will be educated. It's easy to be educated. Just turn on your TV. Absorb the hypnopedia. But it's difficult to educate yourself. That takes work and effort, and the ability to discriminate between science and mass persuasion. So much work. You can start with the references on podcast number 706. With this Gestapo lockdown situation, what they're really stealing from us is far more than money. No, the main thing that's being stolen from us is time. The time of our lives. Time is your total capital, and time is what we need now to rebuild this house that they've vandalized so severely. So you're invited to download and share this video before it gets taken down. I thank you for your kind attention.